Seen a squirrel make it across the street with straight bravery. I know I still have something to prove.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast is also brought to you by Zip Recruiter. Go to ziprecruiter.com/LOFB to post your jobs for free. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball, and of course across on basketballmonster.com as well. We are here to look at everything that happened on Sunday. Everything that happened across the weekend, and also previewing Monday's 8 games for DFS. I'm going to talk about the schedule for week 7 coming up, how it shakes out, streaming options, weekly lineup situations, all that sort of stuff. And again, recapping the stuff that did happen on Friday and Saturday that I don't get a chance to talk about in other parts of the show. So we've got a lot today. It's a busy Monday as usual.
Let's get to it indeed.
One of those teams that we won't see in action either on Sunday or Monday is the Atlanta Hawks. So I'm going to start to talk about what we saw from the Hawks over the weekend. The Baptist John Collins made a couple of starts in the last, well, he started the last two games, I think it is. In the last game, people will be a little bit concerned about the performance that he put in, but it was an absolute smashing that the Hawks copped. So I wouldn't be looking too much into that. All of the starters played limited minutes. They went with some weird bench units, so it wasn't a case of Collins being benched for disciplinary reasons or anything along those lines. It was more the fact that they were just getting pumped. So all those starters saw their minutes reduced. He is still, in playing only 23 minutes per game, the Baptist, he is the 105th ranked player this season, averaging 11.5 and 7, and he has got legitimate top 50 upside. Probably not going to get there this year, but I think top 70 is not too much of a stretch for him, assuming he continues to start. Now, we don't know that for sure. We don't know what will happen when Lukey Babbitt returns, whether he moves back into the starting lineup. But for now, the Baptist John Collins is the starting power forward, and he's putting up some really impressive numbers for the Atlanta Hawks. Let's talk about the next team that we're not going to talk about much more in the show, and that is the Charlotte Hornets. Nicola Batum returned after missing that one game with the elbow issue, and the minutes weren't great for him, but again, it was a case of them getting their asses kicked. So I wouldn't be reading too much into Batum playing so few minutes. I've had people legitimately say, oh man, I didn't think I need to drop Batum after that game, and this happens with Batum all the time, and I don't know why it is. He is the person that people have the quickest trigger to drop. It wasn't even like, I need to add someone so I can drop it to him. It's like, oh, should we just put him on the waiver wire? No. He's one game back from the elbow. Maybe it's going to be an issue for the rest of the year. Maybe it isn't. But I wouldn't be basing it on that one game back where they were getting smashed and he played 23 or 24 minutes in that one. Yeah, it was a shit performance. He was the dud of the night for a reason. But I'm not overly concerned about that performance from Batum. Jez Lamb has been awesome this season. He's played 29 minutes a game this year. That is set to come down. He's been putting up good numbers even in his bench role. So I would keep him. But he moves from being maybe your 9th best guy or your 8th best guy to probably being your 12th or 13th best guy from now on. So that does put him pretty close to that drop zone and someone to really monitor to see how it goes on. And if he ends up losing 2 or 3 minutes or the usage drops at all, then his production is going to suffer and it's going to be hard to continue to see him as a must-own guy. But for now, he is. We'll just see how that all rolls out. Sharania tweeted out today that Paul Millsap has indeed had his surgery. He is out for 3 months with that wrist issue. If you are in a daily changes head-to-head league, it is pretty much impossible for you to hold on to Millsap. You can't afford zeros for 3 months. Yes, he comes back at that enticing time around the fantasy playoffs, but you can't deal with zeros for 3 months because inevitably you'll have someone else get injured for a week or 2 weeks, and then you're dealing with two lots of zeros, and it's impossible. In a rotisserie league, sit him on your bench. Your bench in a roto league basically serves as a de facto IR spot. So you might have 3 IR spots, 4 IR spots given rotisserie leagues with a games limit. So sit him on one of those. And then by the time you do get to that March area or February when he comes back, he's going to be able to have some impact. If you've got an IR spot and it's empty, put him in there. But I think you'll get to a stage at some point where you'll have someone else that's injured and you may need to then switch them into that spot and then end up dropping him. But that might not happen for a month. It might not happen for 6 weeks. And then you're only looking at a 6 week return for Millsap. And then maybe if you're a long, long way ahead, you can deal with zeros for six weeks. And depending on how long he'd need to be on your active roster. So if you've got an IR spot, use it. put him on there and see how it all pans out. Now, Ken Faried went from starting the first game with Millsap out to DNP CD the next game to starting and playing 30 minutes in the next one. So if you can work out the rotation, good on you. Because especially when Mike Malone says, man, we need to get some consistency. I think consistency is what's really going to be good for us. But I'm going to change things up. I swear these coaches have very, very low IQs, just in common sense with their basketball IQ may be great, but none of this shit makes any sense to anybody. Some coaches switched on. Some other coaches, why say this shit? We need to go out there and we need to develop consistency and have a really set rotation. And by getting a set rotation and to get the set rotation, I'm going to change it every game. There's no common sense there. Now, Faried had a good game in that first game. In the last game. I wouldn't bank on him playing 30 minutes a night by any stretch of any imagination. And even if he does, I think he'd be a borderline 12-team league guy. I'd add him in 14s and see how it works out. But given that I don't think he's good, I'm not putting a huge amount of faith in him. But in saying that, if he starts and plays alongside Nikola Jokic, he fits with Jokic. If he's not starting, forget it. Then he's just not going to have a big enough role because he's just shitful with those other guys like Mason Plumlee. He really, really struggles in that sort of a scenario. Let's move on to the next team to talk about. And that is the New Orleans Pelicans. Rajon Rondo continues to be really poor. He's the 219th ranked player this season. The minutes haven't really been there, averaging only 21 so far. The 6 assists are nice, but he's giving you literally nothing else. So for now, I'm still sticking with him as a guy to own, but if they continue to play him 25 minutes a night, which would not be a mistake because, as you're well aware, they have a better point guard who is playing alongside him at the moment. So in those times when Rondo sucks, pretty much all of it, they can just move Drew across and play Darius Miller, play Etuan Moore alongside him, get the shooting there alongside Cousins and alongside Davis. And I think that we might not see Rondo necessarily get to 30 minutes a game and he might be playing 26, 27 a game. It's hard to work out whether it's injury rehabilitation or it's, man, this guy just doesn't work with our team, so we've got to give him less minutes than what we were anticipating earlier. So you hold him for now, but don't be surprised if the value disappears. Darius Miller getting minutes off the bench, hitting lots of threes. He is the new Duke Ellington for this season, the guy that you stream in for threes. We'll talk about the Duke a little bit later on. Darius Miller putting up some good numbers. And Omer Asik returned. He played 11 minutes. Was not expecting to see him on the court at all. 6 points for Asik in that situation. I wouldn't be banking too heavily on anything that he is going to do for this season. Let's talk about the OKC Thunder. Horrible loss for this team. They're really, really struggling. But if we're looking at it from fantasy, there's not much changing. Paul George, Russell Westbrook, they're doing what they need to do. Russ, after a poor start, is now the 17th ranked player, and his free throws are up to 73%. You get those free throws back to 84%, and he jumps back to being close to a top 10 guy. And yeah, he can get some of those other numbers back. He's still averaging 21.5, 9 boards, and 9.6 assists with 2 steals. But his 3-point shooting is way, way down, hitting only 1.7 threes per year. So if that comes back up, and then if we get the free throws back up, then he comes back to being a top 6, top 7 sort of a player. So it's been a rough stretch, but he's looking to recover. Melo's been solid, and Steve Adams has been a real surprise for this year, especially with his defensive numbers, but not much else on this bench. You can't really read too much into the last game either. Terrence Ferguson played 21 minutes in that game, and we saw a lack of minutes from Pat Patterson, Alex Abrines, and Josh Huestis, who'd been playing decently significant roles. I'm talking more about Huestis in that situation. The Toronto Raptors, it's a real weird spot in the front court. Now, I've never said that Jonas Valanciunas isn't good, and we saw him put up a big, big line in the last game, but only played 19 minutes. So it doesn't matter how good you are. If you're playing 18, 19 minutes a game, it's going to be really tough to continue to hold him. Their best big at the moment is Pascal Siakam. He's outplaying Valanciunas, he's outplaying Ibaka, but he's not necessarily a great fantasy option. He can do a little bit defensively, he can get some boards, but I would say he's more of a 14 to 16 team league guy. But the fact that he's intriguing us by playing more minutes than both Ibaka and Valanciunas on most nights does make him interesting. Now, Ibaka you still have to hold. He's been shitful. He's outside the top 110, and it could get to a stage where you drop him, and I think Valanciunas in 10 team leagues especially is someone to consider moving on from. Now, you all know that I love Norm Powell. Everyone knows that I'm a big Norm Powell fan, but I'm getting a lot of questions. Oh, is he a must-add? Again, in all these situations, when a player who'd been playing 23, 24 minutes a night and struggling a little bit comes out and puts up two considerably better lines with 30 minutes a night, why? Why did it happen? And the reason why it happened is because CJ Miles didn't play the last two games because he was out for paternity leave. So it's not a long-term thing for Miles. He'll be back for the next one. And then when he squeezes back into the rotation, then you'll get Norm go back to 24 or 25 minutes a night and his value is capped there. So it's not like, yeah, man, it's 30 minutes for Norm, full steam ahead. It was for two games, but Miles will come back. He'll play his 20 minutes and it's going to take, you know, 3 or 4 minutes off the top of what Powell's doing and reduce his viability there. So don't get overly excited about looking at a guy like that based on those games. Work out why it happened. If something's, oh man, what happened here? Why did it happen? And that's what I try and explain as much as I can on this podcast. By the way, I think Kyle Lowry's back. He's the 26th ranked player. Congratulations if you bought low on him. I haven't been a massive fan of Kyle Lowry in terms of drafting, but he was an elite buy low guy earlier this season. And we're seeing that come to fruition now. The Utah Jazz, Ravishing Rick Rubio continues to struggle. He is still the 58th ranked player, but the assists just aren't there. 5.1 only per game, only 1.7 steals and under 29 minutes per game. You can't really do much apart from hold Rubio and hope it turns around and hope he figures it out over the next, you know, 2 or 3 months, which I have a degree of confidence in him. But it's also the way the Jazz are using him in the offense. It's a little bit of a concern. Now, Rocket Rodney Hood and Don Mitchell were solid across the weekend there also. Well, Derek Favors, he's someone to own now, but once Rude Gobert comes back, I really can't see Favors being a must-own guy once we get Gobert back in action. The last team to talk about here is the Washington Wizards. John Wall is out for 2 weeks. Timmy Frazier will be the starter, and he is going to have standard league value over those 2 weeks. So if you've got a streaming spot, using that on Frazier now is probably a decent idea. You get some of those assists in. He can score. He can hit some threes. I'm not a massive Tim Frazier fan, as many people will be aware of, but he's going to be force-fed a lot of minutes, and that's worth looking at. Tomas Satoransky moves into the backup role, and for deeper leagues, Satoransky can be a contributor, but I'm talking about like 20-team leagues. In the interim, while Johnny Wall is out, you're going to see an increased usage rate for Otto Porter, and that could see him have a huge, huge step up in his value. And towards the end of that, if you can sell high for Porter for a top 15 bloke, because I reckon he can be a top 15 guy over this stretch without Wall, I would definitely be looking into it, because I think he's going to put up some pretty significant numbers with John sidelined for these next 2 weeks. All right, that's a recap of all the teams that I wasn't going to talk about on this podcast as part of the usual flow of the show. Now I've got to tell you about today's sponsor, and that is the good people over at ZipRecruiter. What if hiring could be easier, more streamlined, and less time-consuming? So even when you're busy, you could still be smart about the way that you hire. ZipRecruiter is the way to go. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. And then ZipRecruiter will put its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just 1 day. The easy-to-use ZipRecruiter dashboard lets you manage your hiring process from start to finish all in one place. And you can even get a head start on the interview process by adding screening questions to your job post to help identify the most qualified candidates, so you don't have to waste time sorting through a stack of resumes to find the perfect fit. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right. It is free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/LOFB. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LOFB. One more time. Try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/LOFB. Let's talk monstrous line of the night. And it is, of course, the monstrous line of the night. And it is also the waiver wire line of the night, because Tyus Jones was spectacular for the Minnesota Timberwolves. He only scored 9 points. But in fantasy, we have 8 categories or 9 categories, and they all have an equal contribution. 1 3-pointer, 4 rebounds, 7 assists. But where the money was really made from Tyus Jones here was 7 steals, which is huge, 2 blocks, 3 of 6 from the field, and 2 of 2 from the free throw line. I've been talking about Tyus Jones for 3 years now. It was astonishing to me that Chris Dunn played over him last season. It was astonishing to me that Aaron Brooks got the start over Tyus Jones when Jeff Teague went out with that Achilles soreness. Absolutely baffling. I think Jones can be an NBA starter. I've got him in a dynasty league. I think he's got value here. And obviously, as long as Jeff Teague remains out,
my name is Jeff,
then Jones is going to have value in standard leagues. That's 2 strong performances from him. So yeah, look, Jones, I do really like him. The problem is, is that when Teague comes back, he's going to play 37 minutes a night, and you're going to get 11 minutes of Tyus Jones, because Tom Thibodeau remains the most bullshit coach in the league in terms of overplaying his guys. So the concern, I guess, or the question you've got to ask yourself is, how long is Teague going to be out? And we just don't know. We don't know. He's got Achilles soreness. Is it an Achilles soreness, a Mike Conley Achilles soreness that keeps him out for 4 weeks? Is it a Rubio Achilles soreness that keeps him out for 2 games? Both of those guys have had that Achilles issue in the last 3 or 4 weeks. Rubio was straight back into it. Conley's going to miss, it looks like, almost a month with this Achilles problem. So it could be anywhere between those two. We don't have definite word from Teague or the Timberwolves as to how long he's going to be out. If you have got an empty spot and Tim Frazier's already gone, because we know you're getting 2 weeks of production out of Tim, you grab Jones, see how it goes, see how it works out, because the defensive numbers, the assist numbers can be really valuable to some teams, but we know that it's not going to be a long-term thing unless something weird comes back from the information we hear about Teague, but that doesn't appear like it's going to be the case. Let's talk about now the young gun of the night, and that is Denzel the Hammer Valentine. 14 points for the Hammer, 13 rebounds, 7 assists, 4 triples and a block, 5 of 12 from the field. I can't believe they're finally starting this guy. I can't believe they're finally giving him the opportunity. I harped on and on and on about Valentine last season. Before the season began, this guy has got really high potential as a fantasy player if he gets the playing time. Now, playing with Dwayne Wade and Jim Butler was pretty tough for him to see the court, and also ball hog Rajon Rondo. But now with Butler gone, with Wade gone, with Rondo gone, somebody needs to create, and we are seeing Valentine have that role expanded and putting up very, very important numbers. I think when Zach LaVine comes back, which is going to be towards the end of December, that Justin Holiday should be the guy that heads to the bench and not the Hammer. I don't know whether Fred Hoiberg will see it that way. I think he absolutely 100% should. And let Valentine create stuff, do some things, be this knockdown 3-point shooter, which he has shown a level of proclivity for so far this season, hitting 44% of his threes, which is weird considering he's at 39% on field goals overall. He's the 116th ranked player at the moment, but 81st over the last 2 weeks, where he's seen his playing time jump to 31 minutes per game, averaging 12, 6.5, and 4 with 3 triples and 0.7 steals on 43% shooting and an astonishing 53% from 3. He should be owned in every league at this point. He does have some value long-term on this Bulls squad, which is pitiful, which is putrid, which is disgusting, actually.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
They're embarrassing, this team. I suppose it's good that they are going in a direction. You know, when I don't have issues with teams losing. I have issues with poor decisions that lead to weird things happening. And that was an issue to me, what with Valentine getting limited to begin the season. But now I'm happy with the role that he is playing. And you should be trying to see where you can get anything out of your lottery pick from a year ago. And turns out you can. Imagine that. Imagine getting something out of a lottery pick. Or imagine trying to get something out of a lottery pick. Really just a novel concept that Hoiberg has invented here and putting up some good numbers. So he is a guy that you should be owning pretty much in all leagues. All right, let's move on now to the dud of the night. And that goes to Dion Waiters of the Miami Heat. 7-5-1 for Waiters here at a triple, but he was 2 of 10 from the field, no defensive numbers, and 2 of 2 from the free throw line. He is the 117th ranked player this season, shooting just 40% from the field and 32% from three. So it turns out his 39% shooting last year maybe was just a little bit of an anomaly. I still think that he should be owned in 12 team leagues, but in 10 team leagues, I'm not so certain about that. I don't think that he is a must-own player in a situation like that. He's been okay. Yeah, 15 points and 2 threes with 3.5 assists is good numbers. The efficiency is what really drags him down, and he clearly fits a punt field goal percentage team a lot better than a team that's trying to compete in that area, because he is taking a decent volume. He's got a 26% usage rate this season, and that is really impacting that field goal percentage category for Waiters. So he is someone that you should own, but in 10-team leagues, I wouldn't classify him as a must own in the 10-team format. Let's get into talking about the games from Sunday. There were 3 of them, so it was a relatively quiet day across the NBA. Let's talk about what actually went down here. The first one was the Miami Heat knocking off the Chicago Bulls, and finally, it had been a while. It's been some shit performances from Jim Johnson, but this was a big one. 28 minutes, 15, 7, and 6, 2 steals and 2 blocks. And you can say, yeah, you shot 7 of 9, Josh, so that scoring's not representative of a realistic situation. Yeah, of course. But it's the other numbers that we really love Jim for. It's the 7 rebounds, the 6 assists, the 2 steals and 2 blocks. He's sort of needed to find his way this season with the other pieces being back. But this was a positive outcome for him, and hopefully he can use this as a springboard for the rest of his season. The Duke, Wayne Ellington, 30 minutes for him, 19 points with 5 triples. He is putting up numbers at an incredible rate at the moment. Only 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and 1 steal, but he is just taking threes pretty much every time he touches it. He's the 30th ranked player in the last week, averaging 4.3 triples in those 3 games. And in fact, over the last 2 weeks, he has hit 22 threes in 6 games. That's fantastic. He's shooting at 58% across the last week as well. You know, phenomenal numbers from the Duke. Yeah, really impressive stuff from him. Can you add him in 12 team leagues? Maybe. If you're really desperate for the threes, I can't see why you wouldn't be able to add him. But of course, we're talking about a guy that could see his role move back to a 17 minute a night type of scenario. But for now, he is the elite 3-point streaming option that's available on pretty much every waiver wire around. He's owned in only 8% of leagues. Really enjoying him in my 30 deep league as well, putting up some nice numbers there. The Iron Shoulder was strong, 24, 2, and 3, Goran Dragic with 4 triples, while Tyler Johnson played 30 minutes, and his minutes fluctuate all the time, 10, 5, and 2, but he did have a Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
Yes, so good numbers there for Tyler Johnson, not a 12-team league guy in most cases. Now, the guy that I get a lot of questions, I get so many questions about Josh Richardson. Somehow he's only owned in 35% of leagues, so it must be everyone who listened to this podcast that owns him, which is fair enough because I do like Josh. But he was putrid yet again. 0 points on 0 of 5 shooting, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, a steal, and a block. Now, by all means, you can consider him droppable, but it depends who you're going to go and add. Now, many people, oh, do I drop Richardson for Norm Powell? And as I said, Norm Powell is going to get 23 minutes a night, probably the next game that they play. Richardson's been getting 33 minutes a night pretty much every night. Not this one. He only played 24. But he's been playing big minutes. And at some point it has to kick in. So it all depends. Yeah, do I drop him for Tone Parker? Well, Tone Parker struggled to be a top 170 player for the last 3 years. So I don't really see him turning it around and becoming a guy that is an absolute must-own top 120 guy. So it all depends on who you're looking to drop or add. If it's for the hammer Denzel Valentine, yeah, you know what? I'd probably do it. But if it's for one of these other guys, if it's for, say, Jaren Grant, if it's for PunchBob Shiploke, probably wouldn't. It's all very dependent, but the performances have been disappointing, no doubt. Hassan Whiteside spent almost the entire second half on the bench, 11-9 in 21 minutes. He says his knee's fine, but he was getting it iced or heat pack on it. They didn't need him to play down the stretch as they were annihilating the Bulls, but it is something to pay some attention to with Hassan. On to the Bulls. This is a Fred Hoiberg special. The point guards, you're never going to get a consistent read on them. Chris Dunn is not a good player. He can put up numbers, and that's why I think that he's an ownable guy, but he is not a good player. He played only 24 minutes, had 2, 4, and 3 with 3 steals and missed all 6 of his field goal attempts, while Jaren Grant played 30 and had 24 points on 50% shooting, 3 assists and 2 steals. Now, Grant is a 14 to 16 team league guy. Dunn is a 12 team must-own, but this sort of bullshit will continue all season. I can 100% guarantee you. Neither of these guys are good. Chris Dunn is not good. Jaren Grant is not good. But if Dunn gets 29 to 30 minutes a night, that makes him a 12 team league fantasy player. But he is not a good player. Justin Holiday, 15, 3 and 1 with a steal and a block and 3 triples. Nice, but he is going to become droppable, I believe, by the time 2018 ticks over, while PunchBob Shiploke had 11, 5 and 4 in his 24 minutes. Solid, but it's not enough for 12 team leagues. And Paulie Zipser was in the rotation of Hedo Cristiano Felizio, so that was some weirdness going on there. 3 and 2 for Zipser in 13 minutes. The next game we look at is the Phoenix Suns and the Minnesota Timberwolves. No Devin Booker in this one with a sore great toe. And you talk about coaches, and I cannot for the life of me understand anything that this Phoenix coaching staff does. I talked about it the other day, not coaching staff, Jay Triano. I cannot understand it. And we talked about Dunn and Grant for the Bulls. It's the same thing here with Tyler Ulis and Mike James. 30 minutes for James in this one. Ulis played 20. You aren't going to be able to get a solid handle on this. 65% of the games, Ulis will play more minutes. But the other ones, it'll be James. And he had 26, 5, and 7. And you were really, really interested in that sort of a line. But he'll play 21 minutes in the next game and have 7 points. So there's no consistency with any of these guys. I don't know under what circumstance you would want to develop Mike James as a 27-year-old rookie on a piss-poor team. By the time the team becomes good, he's going to be 30 years old and way past his prime. So for as good a story as it is to have Mike James in the NBA, Get Ulis out there. Run Ulis. Get Booker handling. I don't know if Booker was out in this one, but still, it's a confusing situation. Ulis is still the guy to own, but neither of those guys are must-own players. And then we go to the center rotation. Last game, they started Greg Munro alongside Tyson Chandler, pushing Marquise Chris to the bench, and Alex Lynn was back in the rotation. In this one, they put Chris back at power forward because they weren't going up against the Pelicans. They didn't have the two big men to go against. I guess Taj Gibson doesn't count the same as Anthony Davis. And then we had Len as a DMP CD once more. The fact that Tyson Chandler continues to start and continues to get minutes when your younger players, like Len, like Dragan Bender, like Greg Monroe, who are all significantly younger, are just not seeing the court, not seeing the court in an ideal role, is bafflingly stupid. Now, I know Tyson Chandler's got a reputation as a pretty good bloke, as a good leader. He knows what his role is. He's not insane like Zach Randolph, who, you know, refuses to take a secondary role. He knows what, he knows the score. He knows what shit is happening in Phoenix here, Tyson. I'm 100% sure of that. So the fact that they continue to go to him under every single circumstance possible is as baffling as it is crazy to me. As for Len, I don't see how you can, you know, continue to hold him in 12 team leagues. Munro is a borderline guy. He had 8-5 in 17 minutes while Chandler had 12-7. It just doesn't make any sense given the way that this team structures up. With no Booker, Joshie Jackson started. He had 5-5-3 in 23 minutes. I don't think he will become a standard league player at all this season. While Jared Dudley, he got his 18 minutes because you've got to run a Dudley-Chandler front court as often as possible. Love Dudley, but what's happening? 6-3-6, two steals, a block, and two triples. While Marquise Chris, Chris did not return to start. They did run with Munro again as that starting power forward. And, Chris played 16 off the bench, 7-7 for him. It's pretty much impossible to own Chris in standard leagues. I did have a dream that he played 9 minutes and had a 10-10-10 triple-double with three blocks. That didn't quite come to fruition. And I think Marquise Chris getting 10 assists is the height of ridicularity. But it's real tough to continue holding on to him. With Devin Booker out, Troy Daniels played 31 minutes, 13 points with three triples. He is just the three-point streamer, and that is it. On the Timberwolves, Karl Anthony Towns, 39 minutes for Townsy, and he took a ton of shots, a usage of 32%, 26 shots, and that is more like it. We don't need Jeff Teague running out there for 15 shots a night. Tyus Jones ran the point and had 6 field goal attempts. Townsy had 32-12 with a block and two triples, exactly what you are asking for as an owner. Now, when Teague comes back, that will be reduced because apparently these players are the best players in the world, but they can't adjust anything about their game. And that, I find that always baffling to me, is that every player does everything exactly the same as they always do. Jeff Teague is going to be a guy that shoots and takes shots, and the coaches is going to be like, oh, well, that's just what Jeff does. No, you tell him not to shoot and tell him to give it to your better players. It seems straightforward, but apparently in the NBA, you can't ever tell a player to do something different. Doesn't work that way. Oh, well. Jim Butler was good as well. 25-4-5 with three steals and a block. For as good as, you know, Teague is a good player, I thought he was a shit fit on this team just because, you know, we didn't need a high usage point guard. Now, a three-point shooter would be good, but you didn't need someone running things the way that that Teague does. Taj Gibson was a monster, 37 minutes with Bielitsa out, 16-14 with three assists and a steal. He should be owned in 12-team leagues. And again, I got the questions about Gorgui Dieng. 20 minutes for Gorgui, is he a must-own? No, he's not. He's not a guy to look at all. This is because Bielitsa was out that he got these minutes. People are really, really interested in Dieng, and he's still owned in 38% of leagues. It's just not happening unless we get a significant injury to Towns this season. Then you might want to look at. But again, you always look into the context of why these things happen. This was a game against the Suns that the Wolves won by 11 points, and we had Shabazz Muhammad play 7 minutes and Jamal Crawford play just 12 minutes. Because 39 minutes for Towns, 39 for Tyus Jones, and 41 for Wiggins. It's the only way you can do it, Tibbs. It is absolutely the only way that you can do it. Let's go on to the last game of the day, and that is the Brooklyn Nets and the Memphis Grizzlies. Massive win for Brooklyn. There was a late scratch with Alan Crabb, the blue swimmer, being out, and Jumpin' Joe Harris moved into his starting spot and played 37 minutes. 13-6 for Harris with four triples and a block. He is in that three-point streaming category, and if Crabb remains out, the Nets are the only team with a Sunday-Monday back-to-back. You could get some interesting action from Jumpin' Joe Harris. You can get some interesting value from him. in that spot there. Damari Carroll was fantastic, 24-6 with 2 assists, 2 steals, and a block. While Trevor Booker, he started the second half in place of Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who sprained his ankle, 16-11-4, a steal and a block in 31 minutes for Book. Now, if you want to go and add him in case Hollis-Jefferson misses some time, that's fine, but he's not going to be a high priority sort of a player. Tyler Zeller started once more, 7-5 in 20 minutes, while Jarrett Allen only saw 11 minutes of action, while Tim Mozgov returned to the rotation for whatever reason, probably because Hollis Jefferson was out and Booker was playing more at the four, but Mozgov did re-enter the game before the Hollis Jefferson injury. Spencer Dinwiddie was all right, 9 points, but 7 assists and 2 blocks is really solid, and of course, he is a must-own player. On the Memphis side of things, Chandler Parsons, he didn't play the second half due to some knee tightness. They said it was precautionary, so we're not overly worried, but it's always a concern when it's Chandler Parsons and his knees. He looked good. 12-6 in 12 minutes. He was on track for a really, really big night, and he's not quite a 12-team league guy yet, but he's not far off it. So he is someone to watch, especially the situation here with his knee. Now, Marc Gasol benched for the entire fourth quarter. He wasn't happy about it. I'm not really sure why you would do it. Just let Gasol play. I don't think Fizdale's a good coach. We'll see how that pans out. 18-5 for Gasol with a steal and a block. Just a poor, poor decision from him. Tariq Evans started the second half, 18-6 in 32 minutes over Chandler Parsons. While Mario Chalmers, they did say before the game that they were going to limit his minutes. I didn't think that would mean 19 minutes. He had 3, 1, and 2 with 2 steals just so you could get Andy Harrison 20 minutes, which Fizdale, for some reason, just really does love him some Harrison. Probably the only person in the NBA that thinks Harrison's an NBA-level player. Jermichael Green had 11-7 in 32 minutes, and that's who he is. This is not a below-par performance for Jermichael. That's just who he is. Deontay Davis showed something also, replacing Marc Gasol for that fourth quarter. 4-4 with a steal and a block. He can be a specialist when Brandon Wright is out for those defensive numbers, and we saw that here from him. What's his name? Deontay Davis. Now, I just realized that I forgot to go through the weekly games, which we normally do at the start of the show. So let's get stuck into that right now. We're heading now into week 7 in the NBA. Bring up my little screen there. So we're talking about, you know, week 7, weekly leagues, daily leagues, and let's see how it all breaks down. For Monday, there are 8 games. Tuesday, there are 5. Wednesday, there are 10. Thursday, there are 5. Friday, there are 8. Saturday, there are 8. And Sunday, there are 5. So realistically, you can stream in 6 of the 7 days this week and maybe even all 7. So last week was a shit week. It was an unstreamable week. This week, knock yourselves out. Apart from Wednesday, you should be able to have a spot on your roster, on your active roster, for a player every single day. So managing your ads, managing your acquisitions, to get the most out of those positions is going to be really important and help you get the win this week. Now, let's look at how the teams look in terms of games played. 4 games. We've got the Cavs, the Pistons, the Warriors, Clippers, Lakers, Heat, Wolves, Magic, Sixers, Kings, and Spurs. For 3 games, it's Celtics, Nets, Bulls, Mavs, Nuggets, Rockets, Pacers, Grizzlies, Bucks, Pelicans, Knicks, Thunder, Suns, Blazers, Jazz, and Wizards. And there are 3 teams that have 2 games this week. That's the Atlanta Hawks, the Charlotte Hornets, and the Toronto Raptors. And for players on those teams, it is hard to consider starting those guys in weekly leagues. Of course, Jim Harden is a guy that you would start with those games. Probably about it, really. It's hard to consider him. Not Jim Harden, sorry. I'm all over the place. Toronto, Kyle Lowry. Completely off track there. Kyle Lowry is a guy that you would consider. DeMar DeRozan, perhaps. Kemba Walker, perhaps as well. But they're not absolute no-brainer guys that you have to start in that situation. Dennis Schroeder, probably not. The Baptist, probably not. In fact, if you could make a case that no Hawks, Raptors, or Hornets players are must-start guys with 2 games this week, it is a tough situation. Most of your decisions for your schedule is going to be based on the guys playing 3 games and who's got better schedule. So we want to look at the Rockets. That's where my Rockets part came from. They have got a very strong schedule. The Nets, the Pacers, and the Lakers. The Bulls also have a strong schedule. Suns, Nuggets, Kings, the Bucks, and the Celtics also with things looking really good. On the weak side of things, the Grizzlies with 3 games, they've got a shit schedule. Twice against the Spurs and once against the Cavs. The Pelicans take on Utah, Minnesota, and Portland. Denver and Phoenix also have poor schedules. You've got the Suns, who play all 3 of their games on the road this week, whereas the Celtics have all three games at home. The best schedule of the week goes to the Warriors. Four games this week they play against the Kings, the Lakers, the Magic, and the Heat, but that might not be good things for Warriors owners. Now, for Monday, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant are all questionable, and Andre Iguodala is doubtful. So they're all likely. I would say that there's a chance that all of those guys miss at least one game this week, and that takes them from a four-game week down to a three-game week. Now, you probably still start, well, not probably. You definitely start all those guys, assuming they're only going to miss one game, but there is a possibility that they do sit at least one, maybe two games this week, which could be, it could develop into some sort of a problem for them. Let's have a look at how all the back-to-backs and pseudo-back-to-backs play out for the week. Monday, Tuesday, you've got the Kings and the Cavs who have got a back-to-back, so starting off with one of those teams would be interesting. In fact, the Cavs have a very interesting schedule because they play Monday, Tuesday, and then they also play Tuesday, Thursday, which is sandwiching that 10-game Wednesday. So you could get three games for one addition. So guys like the Plumber, J.R. Smith, you could use Jumpin' Jay Crowder in there as well. Dwayne Wade might be available. Iman Shumpert is back and ready to go for Monday, so maybe you could look at him for those three games in four nights. The other Tuesday, Thursday pseudo back-to-back guys, we've got the Bulls, the Bucks, the Jazz, and the Nuggets. And the Bulls become interesting there because they also play the Thursday, Friday back-to-back. So you could add a Bulls player on Tuesday, whether that is PunchBob, Shiploh, Jaren Grant, Denzel Valentine, who should be owned anyway, Chrissy Dunn, if he is around. You can add these guys and get three games in four nights out of them. The Jazz also have that three game in four night from Tuesday through to Friday, so maybe a guy like Jonas Jerebko, who likely will be starting and playing three of those games in four nights. Friday, Saturday, we've got the Pistons, the Kings, the Pelicans, and the Grizzlies, and then to back it, or to finish it off over the weekend on Saturday, Sunday, the Lakers and the Clippers have a back-to-back. Talk about some three and four night opportunities. I've already talked about a few of them. Miami, Minnesota, Chicago, Utah, and Washington have three games in four nights from Tuesday through to Friday. The Cavs have three and four from Monday through to Thursday. The Clippers from Thursday through to Sunday. So end of the week adds for like a Wes Johnson, maybe a Sendarius Thornwell, maybe a Sammy Decker, maybe a Will Reed. You can get three games there. And the Pelicans and Grizzlies, they have three and four nights between Wednesday and Saturday. So guys like Dylan Brooks, Chandler Parsons, if he is ready to go, although he will probably sit one of those games, I would imagine. Deontay Davis, if Brandon Wright is still out, is also an option. Then you've got Darius Miller, Etwan Moore for the Pels for those three games in four nights over there. All right, what I am going to do now is I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to preview the 8-game slate for DFS that we've got for Monday. But before we do that, we've got a song by Jake McKelvey and the Countertops called Babe, I'm Gonna Cry All Over You. Thank you, Jake.
All this cooking, all this cleaning, all this midnight movie screening, watching those deleted scenes and never knowing who is who. I can hear, but I can't listen. I can glimmer, I can't glisten. All I ever hear's this hissing. All I ever see is you. And if you leave, darling, if you disappear, well, I'll make a list of my least favorite puppeteers. And I'll cast a spell on all the things that I've accrued. Oh, and babe, I'm gonna cry all over you.
All right, guys, we're back. Let's talk DFS. Let's talk perfect DFS from Sunday's three-game slate on FanDuel. Tyus Jones, 51.3, and Mike James, 39.5. Andrew Wiggins had 37, and Tyreek had 28.7. Jim Butler, 48.3, and the Hammer. Denzel Valentine, 42.1. Jim Johnson, 44.4, and Trevor Booker, 40.2, and Karl Anthony Towns, 51.4, for a total of 382.9, and that cost $59,000. On DraftKings, Mike James, 42.75, the Hammer, 45.75. Damari Carroll had 40.5. Trevor Booker had 40.75. Townsie had 54. Tyus Jones, 43. Jim Johnson, 40.75. And Jim Butler, 45, for a total of 352.5. And that cost $45,900 dues. All right. Eight games, for DFS for us to talk about. We will start with the first game of the night. What a novel place to start. That is the Orlando Magic and the Indiana Pacers. John Isaac has been ruled out on the Magic game note, so unlikely that he'll be ready to play. So those minutes go to Mo Spates, and he is a GPP option. We've seen that time and time again. For the Pacers, the guy we want to check on, of course, is Vic Oladipo, who missed the last game with a knee bruise. If he is out, Lance Stevenson becomes the guy we want to take a look at, and maybe you could throw Corey Joseph into a GPP lineup, but Lance is the guy to really look at and target there. At point guard, Lord Alfred Payton was very, very good in his last game, 46 points. He's at 7,500. I don't like the fact that he's been jacked up by $600 for this game in a tournament, maybe, but I don't feel the level of confidence required to use him in cash. Corey Joseph at 39, as I said, tournament, but probably not. While Daz Collison, 6,400. Daz has been putting up good numbers. 3,000 would be a lot. 31 points in his last five. His lowest score has been 27. His highest has been 33. That makes him an okay cash guy. It's not a fantastic cash play, but if you're looking for a level of solidarity in your point guard, yeah, Daz is not bad. Get your 30 points, which at 6,400 is not bad, but it's also not great. He does have a positive matchup here against the Magic, though. At shooting guard, Terry Ross is at 4,300. He had 28 in the last game. He probably won't have another good game until January, so you can look at him maybe as a tournament guy. Vic Oladipo at 8,000 did very well against the Magic last time because, of course, it was a revenge game. At $8,000, I think it's hard to use him with a sore knee. At small forward, Evan Fournier at 5,700. Fournier's been okay, but nowhere near what he was doing at the start of the year, so I'm really not into using him in this matchup. While Bojan Bogdanovic at 4,600, he had really started to escape the GPP-only moniker. He's right back there now. His performances have fallen off because his shooting was never going to be able to sustain at that rate, and we're seeing that come into effect now. While John Simmons is at 4,400, he is just not that good. 18-point average over his last five, 15-point with his highest score being 18 points, which is just not going to cut it. As for Lance, he had 30 in that last game, so Vic is out. All aboard Lance Stevenson. At power forward, Thaddeus Young's at 6,200. I think he's a really strong cash play with some decent tournament upside. While Domantas Sabonis is at 5,900. I can't really get behind him at that price. Yeah, he put up 29 in the last game, played 30 minutes. In fact, it was just him, Young, and Miles Turner who played the big man role. But I really can't see him at 5,900 being a value play. As Gordon's at 7,400. I've liked what As has been doing in the last couple of games. It's not a bad matchup for him, so I think that he's a decent enough play at that price. At center, Miles Turner's at 7,500. I can't go near him in cash, but we know he's got 50-point upside, so that makes him a tournament option. While Vooch is at 8,100. The only reason I'd really go for Vooch here is because of the matchup, and Miles Turner does allow opposition centers to put up some okay numbers. So I would consider Vooch, but he's really more of a tournament guy. And as I said, Mo Spates does have some of that GPP upside that we look for so often when talking DFS. On DraftKings, tournament options, Boyan's at 4,800, Lord Alfred's at 64, and Miles Turner at 66, which is a very good price for Miles Turner. And at for cash, I like Vooch at 7,300 on DraftKings. So everything I said about Vooch before, you know, is really multiplied or amplified on DraftKings because his price is just so much lower and there is value there for him to be used in that scenario. The Cleveland Cavaliers taking on the Philadelphia 76ers. Of course, we need to check if Benny Simmons is going to play. If Simmons is out, then TJ McConnell gets the biggest bump in value. He dropped 54 in the last game at 5,400, and guards v. Cavs is one of the best matchups going around in DFS. Now, 5,400 is a decent price for TJ, but if Simo is out, then I'm all over that. I don't expect him to drop 54 again, but I think getting 30 out of him is minimum expectation, pretty much. So I'd be looking to get that. Now, Iman Shumpert, will he come straight back in and start? Jose Calderon's been okay. I don't really think we need to concern ourselves too much with either of those guys for DFS. Of course, Simmons is the big one that we need to pay attention to. The other point guards here, Jared Bayless at 3,600. If Simo is out, he had 27 in the last game. I'd consider him a GPP option to look at. At shooting guard, JJ Redick at 5,500, putting up some pretty strong numbers recently this season. 28-point average over the last five. Guards against the Cavs is a good spot, so I think Redick is fine to have a look at, even in cash, while Luwawu Cabarrot is a tournament guy if Simmons happens to be out. The plumber, J.R. Smith, at $4,000. Good game from him in the last one, but you cannot rely on what he is going to produce, while Kyle Korver is always a GPP guy. Dwayne Wade has dropped down to 5,400. Don't mind using Wado here. I think he is a GPP sort of a guy without being a cash option. Small forward, Bob Cubs at 6,700. I like Covington in this matchup. I think 30 points from him is almost a lock, and he's got that 35-point upside, so I think he is a strong option. And, of course, on the other side,
LeBron James.
He is at $12,000. That's pretty expensive, but I expect LeBron to come out and come out pretty hard, play a decent chunk of minutes, and be able to go out and put up close to 60 points here. I do like his, we love his floor, we love his reliability, but that is a high price, no doubt about that. And it's not a let's lock him in first and build around it. But if you've got enough cheap guys in there that you like, you're putting LeBron in is definitely worth a look. At power forward, Simo is at $10,500. If he's ready to play, I think getting 50 out of Ben Simmons almost feels like it's going to happen every night. And that's a pretty good floor. Jay Crowder's at 4,100. Nah, no thanks, mate. Amir Johnson, Dario Saric, and Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
Just a quick anecdote here. Went out to the thing in Melbourne just finished yesterday, the night noodle markets. Went out there with Ben on Saturday night, and we're going to get some dumplings, I think it was. And I said, do you want to order? Do you want to go up to the lady and order? And you go, I guess they're all right. I go, yeah, you have my card. It's a tap on card. I'll stand behind you. Go and order it. Tap the card on the FPOS and we're ready to go. So she goes up, you know, what do you want? He goes, I'll have the trifecta, which is, you know, the combination of the three bao that he was going to get. I'll have the trifecta. She goes, okay, can I just have a name for the order?
My name is Jeff.
That's what he said to her in the voice, in the accent. She started laughing, wrote down Jeff. He couldn't believe he pulled it off, and I almost pissed my pants. So that's a completely boring bullshit story, but just drops in real life happening here. I just mentioned Jeff Green, so I could talk about that. Dario Saric at 5,500, continuing to start, putting up good numbers. If Simmons is out, I like Saric quite a bit here. The process, Joel Embiid is at 9,700. That is obviously a very good price for Embiid, but I'm not feeling super confident about him in cash. He's more of a tournament guy at this point. And Kevin Love, I'd say the same at 7,800. He could get toasted by Embiid and he could see his minutes limited to a degree. I don't feel strongly about using him in any sort of cash situation. Let's move on to DraftKings now. Tournaments, you've got Bob Cove at 65, McConnell at 47, and then they would upgrade that to cash if Simmons is out, and Kevin Love's at 75, whereas cash, you've got LeBron at 11.4 and JJ Redick at 5,100 as cash options over on DraftKings. The next one we look at is the Portland Trailblazers and the New York Knicks. Enes Kanter is questionable, probably more on the doubtful side of questionable, so that means we're looking more at Kylo Quinn as a player here. Kristaps Porzingis.
Porzingis.
He is questionable. He missed the last game, and Michael Beasley started in his place. If Porzingis is out, then we're all over Beasley. But the last game that Porzingis missed, Beasley wasn't as sensational as he was in this last one, so it's not like an absolute lock guarantee, load him up in every lineup, because he's not. If he was that good, he'd be playing every night instead of being literally out of the rotation, which is what Beasley has been for big chunks of this season. Where else are we? Are there the injuries to talk about for this game? Let's talk point guards, of course. Dame Lillard is at $9,000. I feel good about Lillard getting 45 here. I think it's a really strong spot for him. Jarrett Jack's at 48. He's getting good minutes, Jack. I don't see the consistency or the appeal I need, and there's no point in using Frank Ntilikina at this stage. Shabazz Napier looked like he was pushing into a solid role in the mid-20s, but with Mo Harkless going to the bench and Pat Connaughton moving into the starting lineup, Napier's seen his minutes reduced, so his value has definitely plummeted. As for Connaughton, he's at 3,400. He dropped 30 points in the last game. People were very excited about Pat Connaughton's performance. Do I go and add Pat Connaughton? Do I use him? But remember, the game before he started and played 15 minutes. So it's 37 in one, 15 in the other. Which one is it? Who knows? We don't know at this point, but he is definitely worth a GPP look at 3,400 if he's going to play 30-plus minutes. I like CJ McCollum at 68. I like Timmy Hardaway at 65. Both of those guys are decent guys here. At small forward, Courtney Lee, consistently a strong cash play, 5,300. Doug McDermott and Evan Turner are the opposite of strong cash plays. They combined for 6.6 points in their last game. Mo Harkless at 3,200, no way. Lance Thomas, no way. At power forward, Noah Vonleh is at 4,000. Much like Courtney Lee, I think he's a lock for cash. 4,000, bang, we're done. Get your 20 points, totally fine. and then you can build around that, enables you to put in those high price guys like LeBron James that we talked about earlier. As for Porzingis at 9,100, as a tournament guy, sure, but I wouldn't feel strongly about using him in cash. At center, Koch had 50 points in his last one, 4,800. With Kanter looking like he's out, I think that is very, very strong. But we've seen in the past, Hornacek stuff around with Koch, or when he's had opportunities, he's shit the bed. Now, we know he's a permanent beast most of the time, but sometimes there's these inexplicable, weird, poor performances from Kylo Quinn. So I do like him a lot if Kanter is out, which is what we're assuming at this point. Yusuf Nurkic, 7,400, putting up some strong numbers, 37-point average over his last five. No real concerns here. I like him quite a bit. While Enes Kanter at 64, I wouldn't be using him, considering we don't think that he is going to play at this stage. On DraftKings for GPPs, it's Connaughton at 32 and Jarrett Jack at 39. And then cash, there's a lot of cash guys I like here. Timmy Hardaway at 67, McCollum at 69, Lillard at 88, Courtney Lee at 47, and Yusuf Nurkic at 6,800. And of course, Kylo Quinn at 4,000 is an absolute smashable guy if Enes Kanter is out, which is what we're expecting. Let's go on to the next game. It is Detroit and the Boston Celtics. The tackle box, John Lua, unlikely to be playing in this one, so those backup minutes go to Eric Morland. While Marcus Morris missed the Celtics last game, he will be back and likely starting again and playing that 25-minute or so role. Reggie Jackson's numbers have been a little bit down lately, but at 5,600, I do really like this spot here for Reg. I think he's got 30-point upside, and 5,600, that's a pretty good bet. Kyrie's at 84, and I think you're almost getting 37, 38 out of Kyrie every night, which is a very, very strong floor. Ish Smith and Terry Rozier, I think hard to use either of those guys. Now, Rozier's been good, but some of that's been coming with blokes missing time, and with everyone healthy, it is hard to see him get enough minutes. At shooting guard, Avery Bradley, 5,300. Is this a revenge game for Braddles? Well, let's see how it goes. His form has been pretty poor recently. I like him as a tournament guy, but not relying on him in cash. While Marcus Smart at 5,900. If the shot falls, the numbers are pretty good for Smart. So at 5,900, I think he is a tournament type of guy. While Jaylen Brown is a small forward, and we'll get into that now. He missed the last game to attend his best friend's funeral. He's at 6,100. He's averaging 32 over the last five. It's a decent matchup for him. I've got no problem with using him as a cash guy here. While Stan Johnson at 4,000 has been okay recently, but I just don't see much in terms of reliability or upside. For the power forwards, we've got Jason Tatum at 5,700. The numbers have been a little bit down, but I feel pretty good about Tatum at 57. I think that's a really good price. While Toby Harris at 65 is just too expensive. His production's fine. His consistency is pretty good, but that price is probably $600-$700, just too high for Toby. While Marcus Morris at 4,500, I have no interest. At center, Al Horford, 7,400. Some strong numbers recently from Al, averaging 35 in the last three, which included 44 in the last game. I don't think I'd feel overly great about using him at that price, though probably a fade to me. While Andre Drummond at 8,900, probably just a little bit too high to use in cash, but for tournaments, he does have 50-point upside, so he is in play here against Al Horford. Over on DraftKings, for cash, it's Tatum at 58, Irving at 82, Reggie Jackson at 56, and for GPPs, I like Marcus Smart at 5,300. Let's move on to the next one. We have got the Brooklyn Nets and the Houston Rockets. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson sprained his ankle today, and the Blue Swimmer was a late scratch just before the game tipped off, so we need to check the status of both those guys. If the Blue Swimmer is out, you're going to see a lot more of Joe Harris, so he becomes an option. And if Hollis-Jefferson is out, Trevor Booker gets a lot more minutes as well, as does Damari Carroll. So there are going to be some interesting scenarios. Of course, you can check the way that I look at all this on Basketball Monster with our what-if scenario. So if those guys are out, how do we project the minutes of the other players? So you can go check all that out. At point guard, Chrissy Paul's at 9,100. Yeah, Paul's been good, but that is quite an expensive price. I'd look at him as a tournament sort of player only. While Spencer Dinwiddie has also been good himself, he is at 7,500. I think that's probably just a little bit too high for Spence. At shooting guard, Jim Harden, 11,800. In on that, totally. I'd much rather him than LeBron at 12,000. Absolute smashable for Jim there. Caris LeVert, 4,500. Well, if the Blue Swimmer is out, I like LeVert at that sort of a price. I think he does even become a cash play in that scenario, whereas Eric Gordon at 52, I cannot get behind him with Chris Paul around. At small forward, the Blue Swimmers at 5,400. Yeah, probably wouldn't go that way. Damari Carroll at 57. If we have Crabb out again, or Hollis Jefferson, either one of those guys, 57 for Damari feels a strong play. In the last game for the Rockets, PJ Tucker started over Ryan Anderson. It doesn't really mean that much for fantasy. It means that we don't really want to consider Ando. And Tucker's not really going to get it done for us either. Trev Ariza is at 5,400. It's a good matchup, so I GPP him, but that's really about it. I talked about Jumpin' Joe Harris already. He's at 4,100. Almost a lock to get 20 points, I think, with if Crabb happens to be out. So he would be a good cash and a good tournament play. At power forward, Rondé, I don't think he's going to play. So I don't think we'd want to use him at this point. Trevor Booker at 48, really would like. That's really good value there for Trev. I think that's a super spot to use him. And Nene is out, so Tariq Black at 3,100. You could do worse in a GPP. You could do better, but you could do worse. At center, Clint Capela with no Nene. Extra minutes should be coming his way. Unbelievable matchup against the Nets, 7,300. This has got 45 to 50 point upside for Clint, so I'm all about it. Jarrett Allen is at 37, more of a tournament sort of a guy. Don't feel confident about him in cash. While Tyler Zeller at 34, the numbers have been okay for Zeller, but realistically, it's not something you can rely upon or hang your hat on in any sort of situation. Over on DraftKings for tournaments, Allen at 34 and Jumpin' Joe at 36, which would move to a cash play if Crabb is out. And then for cash, you've got Jim Harden at 11.8, Capela at 7,000, and Chrissy Paul is at 7.9 on DraftKings. So I really, really do like Chris Paul at that $7,900 price tag. Let's go to the next game. It is the Dallas Mavericks and the San Antonio Spurs. Wes Matthews is questionable with calf tightness. If he is out, you're going to see more minutes for guys like Devin Harris, guys like Yogi Ferrell, Antonius Cleveland. Maybe he gets a couple of extra minutes there. Nerlens Noel is also questionable. He's playing 4 minutes a night, so that's not a real big impactful guy. Dennis Smith is at 6,000. Hasn't quite been where he needs to be. I think he does have some upside, but I'd be looking at him as tournament only, if at all. While Tone Parker is going to make his season debut, he's at 3,300. I just don't really believe in Tone Parker as a good DFS or fantasy option at this point. I think his minutes will be limited, and I really can't see him smashing through. But in saying that, 3,300 is a very, very cheap price. Probably still steer away. Pat Mills at 46, he's going to be impacted by Parker in some degree, while Yogi Ferrell at 35, if Wes Matthews is out, I'd be all about Yogi at 3,500, because he will have to get more minutes. At shooting guard, Barea at 45, another guy who would benefit from a Wes Matthews absence, and he could easily put up 25 points, which would make him worth looking at. And Devin Harris at 33, the same, a GPP type of option. Dan Green at 47, not feeling that. And Wes at 5,000, also not really into it. At small forward, you've got Kyle Anderson at 5,600. He's the Courtney Lee of the Western Conference. Just going to get me consistent 27 points, and that is fantastic for cash. The pencil Harrison Barnes at 66 is Kyle Anderson on a higher level. Also a pretty consistent cash game option there. While Rudy Gay at 45, I'm not going to look at him. At power forward, LaMarcus Aldridge is at 83. I just think it's a little bit too high, especially for a blowout potential matchup like this one. And then we've got Dwight Powell. Dirk is an interesting one. $5,000 for Dirk. He's averaging 30 across the last five. I reckon you have to consider using Dirk Nowitzki here. He's playing more minutes. He's averaging 28 minutes across the last three and 34 points. I think that you have to consider using Dirk at $5,000. At center, Mejri, no. Laverne, no. Pau Gasol at 6,000. I think he's got some GPP upside, but I wouldn't feel totally comfortable with using him in any sort of a cash lineup. On DraftKings, GPPs are Barea at 4,000. And Wes Matthews, if he plays at 4,000, I really like that at 4,000, if he plays. For cash, Dennis Smith at 5,000, the pencil at 55, Dirk at 4,300 is great. Aldridge at 7,700 is also really good. And Kyle Anderson at 5,100 is really rock solid with what he's been doing lately, or pretty much all this season, actually. The Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors, just stay away. You just stay away from this game as much as you can. We've got Andre Iguodala, who is doubtful. You've got Draymond Green, who is questionable. Kevin Durant, who is questionable. Steph Curry, who is questionable. So many different scenarios of who could play. If you want to get let's try my words again. If you want to get sneaky, Omri Caspi in a GPP. With Iguodala out, his minutes are going to go up. If Durant misses, his minutes are going to go up. If Draymond misses, his minutes are going to go up. The only guy that, if it's the only player that misses is Steph Curry, then Caspi won't really be impacted. The other guy, if Durant is out and if Green is out, Jordy Bell becomes the option. But we're really going to need Draymond to be out for him to become a solid DFS option. It's going to be really tough to rely upon them. Plus, if all those guys play, it's going to be a blowout. So relying upon Steph or KD or Draymond is tough. The other player you want to look at in a GPP is Klay Thompson, who could have an opportunity, theoretically, without Durant, Draymond, and Curry, and have high usage and put up a 40-point game. So he would be worth a look, definitely. On the Kings, they're just hard to use anyway, because their lineups are bullshit, their rotations are bullshit. Dave Yeager doesn't seem to know what he's doing, or sorry, what he is doing is just completely incorrect for what this team needs. There's no reliability for really anybody on this team, apart from the aging Zach Randolph. We'll go through it anyway. Yeah, De'Aaron Fox at 4,800. No. Not against the Warriors, not interested. Steph at 97, you can't really use him. Georgie Hill had been playing decent minutes, and then like 23 minutes a game for the last few. He's at $5,000 in a tournament. I would look at Hill, but he looks back to being disinterested. Shawnee Livingston would be worth a look at minimum salary if Steph happens to be out. At shooting guard, Garrett Temple's at 3,700. That's great, but he just doesn't put up any fantasy stats. I'm not interested in him. Clay is worth a look at 7,000, while Bogdan Bogdanovic at 39, I think, is a tournament guy that I would have a marginal level of interest in. Same with Budrick Hield at 44, who's coming off a 38-point performance, which I don't think he'll be able to replicate. At small forward, Caspi's at 4,000. I'm all about Caspi. With Iguodala out, I think you can almost put him into cash, and then the ability for him to actually get better with Durant or Draymond out really gives some value to him. Durant, I can't see him playing, to be honest. Power forward, Draymond, 81. Wouldn't use him even if he was playing, which we don't know. Well, Zach Randolph at 5,500. He's inexplicably getting minutes. He's putting up numbers because he's able to take as many shots as he wants, averaging 37 over the last three. At 5,500, I'm all about that. Now, he could come out, though, and get played 19 minutes and completely screw everything up, but I am pretty confident with Randolph at the moment. At center, Cauley Stein at 5,500. He's the sort of center that should be able to hang with the Warriors, but we don't know what Jaeger's going to do on a nightly basis. 5,500 for him is okay, but there's clear 35-point upside here, so he is a GPP guy. Costa Kufos, no. McGee, Petrulia, also knows. On DraftKings for this game, tournaments for Hill at 42, Randolph at 54, and Cauley Stein at 51, and Clay at 7,000 is a strong play, I think, even in cash, given the potential absences on this roster in this game. The last game of the night is the Battle of Staples Center, the Lakers against the Clippers. Larry Nance is probable to return. He should, and Luke Walton said he sees no reason why he shouldn't start, so I would assume that means he's going to start. That's going to impact Brook Lopez's minutes, it's going to impact Julius Randle's minutes, and it's going to impact future MVP Kyle Kuzma's minutes. I still think Kuzma gets 30 minutes, but he won't be getting the 36 a night. Randle won't be getting 27 a night, and Lopez will probably be in low 20, so there is some concern with those guys. At point guard, Lonzo Ball's at 7,200. Just quietly, he's averaging 33 over the last five, which is pretty bloody good. I still look at him more as a GPP guy, but he's putting up those other numbers. Sindorius Thornwell and Jawan Evans are both at 3,600. They're inconsistent, and I'm not really looking too hardly at them. At shooting guard, I love Lou Williams at 73. I love Jordy Clarkson at 48. Both those guys are pretty strong plays. Well, 5,500 for Austin Rivers is a little bit on the expensive side. For the small forwards, Ingram's at 6,300. I feel good about that. I think there's a 30-pointer in his future. While Wes Johnson at 5,200 also think that getting 25 out of him is a pretty decent expectation. For the power forwards, Randle's at 5,000. Not with Nance back. I cannot endorse that. Kyle Kuzma, the future MVP, is at 5,500. Again, with Nance back, it's a tough one to get behind. Well, 9,700 for Blake Griffin. Not that I'm worried about Nance being back, but I think that's just probably a little bit too high for Blake, given the other talent that is around. As for Nance, he's at 4,600, maybe in a GPP, but I don't feel good there. I do feel good about DeAndre Jordan. 7,800 for him, a 40-pointer, is not out of the realms of possibilities. Where Brook at 5,400, I'd have to say that is a big no from me. On DraftKings, tournaments for Ball at 71, Clarko at 48, and Rivers at 49, whereas cash, I've got Ingram at 61, Wes Johnson at 44, Lou Williams at 65, and DeAndre Jordan at 6,700. Let's go and have a look at the other sites now. On Yahoo for GPPs, Jarrett Jack, Terry Ross, Shabazz Napier, Stan Johnson, Jarrett Allen, Pat Connaughton, Lance Stevenson, Caris LeVert, Jay Crowder, Kyle O'Quinn, Yogi Ferrell are all some tournament options, along with Andre Drummond and Joel Embiid. For cash, we have got Chrissy Paul over on Yahoo, Lou Williams, Zaza Pachulia is an interesting one, Wes Johnson, Dirk, Jumpin' Joe Harris, and Austin Rivers. For Moneyball tournaments, Jarrett Allen, Domantas Sabonis, Pat Connaughton, Jarrett Jack, Kyler Quinn, Lord Alfred Payton, Jumpin' Joe Harris, TJ McConnell, Lance Stevenson. Have I got anyone else on my cash list? I think that does it for cash. For tournament, that's tournaments. My mistake, that's tournaments. These ones are cash. Clint Capella, Marcus Smart, Yusuf Nurkic, Nick Vucevic, Lou Williams, Al Horford, Noah Vonleh, Thaddeus Young, CJ McCollum, Jim Harden, Klay Thompson. And for draft stars, for tournaments, Connaughton, Vonleh, Sabonis, Miles Turner, Devin Harris, Jared Allen, Trevor Booker. And if we're going to look at cash now, we have got Lou Williams, Omri Caspi, DeAndre Jordan, Chrissy Paul, Wes Johnson, Austin Rivers, Spencer Dinwiddie, Clint Capella, LaMarcus Aldridge, Jordy Clarkson, Joel Embiid, Yusuf Nurkic, and Jumpin' Joe Harris. Guys, that just about does it for today's show. Not just about does it, that actually does do it for today's show. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. And you can also find it on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And if you're on YouTube, give it a thumbs up and a subscription and leave a comment below. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Reggie Bullock.